Hi, everybody. Welcome to English Digest. I'm Tom.
Hi, I'm Stephanie.
And we're going to be doing our NewsWatch unit for the month of May today. We're also going to do our All English unit today because we kind of thought the English teacher needed the day off. But also, we want to challenge you to listen to our program completely in English and not rely on the crutch of Chinese every 10 minutes or so when the Chinese teacher chimes in and explains everything for you. And we've got a couple of news stories to talk about today. We're talking about bacteria being used in fashion.
Ooh.
That's kind of weird.
Yeah.
And then we've got some sort of prisoner program in Uzbekistan in which they're encouraging the prisoners to do some reading because they might get out of prison earlier if they do so.
Just a couple days, but still, I think it's good to encourage more reading. And the books they're encouraging them to read hopefully help them think about their morals, their values, and just be more of a critical thinker in general will help your life because we've got a lot of crazy stuff going on. Right now, though, guys, we're going to listen to the first part of our unit. Let's go.
NewsWatch. From lab to wardrobe, how bacteria could revolutionize sustainable fashion. Scientists have developed a revolutionary method for producing colorful, sustainable textiles using bacteria. Researchers at the Korea Advanced Institute of Science and Technology have discovered that bacteria can not only be used to create fabric, but also dye it in multiple colors, all in a single process. This innovation could replace the harmful chemicals and synthetic fibers currently used in the textile industry, which pollute water, soil, and air. The team used bacterial cellulose, a natural fiber produced by microbes, and combined it with color-producing bacteria. Initially, the bacteria struggled to work together, but the researchers overcame this challenge by introducing the color-producing bacteria only after the fabric-forming bacteria had grown. This method created fabrics in shades of purple, blue, green, yellow, and red. Tests showed that the colors remained bright after washing and heat exposure. While the technology may take 5 years to reach stores, it offers a promising, eco-friendly alternative to traditional textiles. The researchers hope this will encourage consumers to choose sustainability over cost, helping protect the environment for future generations. Okay, let's talk about the first part of our unit today. The title is From Lab to Wardrobe, How Bacteria Could Revolutionize Sustainable Fashion. So I've got a range of things from this to that, and it's going from the laboratory to your wardrobe, which is your collection of clothing, or it could actually be the piece of furniture in which your clothing is stored. But it's from the lab to your wardrobe, and we're talking about bacteria and how it could make a big change with sustainable fashion. So that's what to revolutionize means. It means to make a big change in something. And this is sustainable fashion, a fashion that doesn't really harm the environment. You can keep recycling it and use it over and over again, supposedly.
Yeah, to revolutionize means to change something completely in a really dramatic way. And it sounds like this could really change things. Tom, you mentioned that a piece of furniture that you put your clothes in can be called a wardrobe.
Mm-hmm.
I don't personally tend to call it a wardrobe, but some people do. It's the kind that is not built into the wall, guys. It's separate. And it's a big piece of furniture. When I moved into my apartment, my landlord had a big wardrobe. It was a piece of furniture. But yeah, I call those just, you know, closets. But we tend to call them special names when they're not built into the wall. If you live in a city either like Taipei or even New York City, you don't usually have closets that are built in. You're in older buildings and usually you have to buy a piece of furniture that you can open up and put your clothes in. But here, I think it can also, as Tom said, refer to real clothes. Your wardrobe includes all your shirts and your pants and your hats and your, you know, your jewelry, it includes everything that you wear. So let's look at what they're doing to change completely what fashion means and how we can make it perhaps sustainable, where we're not throwing out fast fashion all the time and destroying and polluting our world.
Right. And bacteria, of course, are microorganisms that could be good or they could be bad, but they're using bacteria here to do something with the clothes we wear. And in the first paragraph, it says, scientists have developed a revolutionary method for producing colorful, sustainable textiles using bacteria. Okay, so they've come up with this idea. I believe it's in South Korea. And textiles, of course, refers to cloth as it is manufactured by companies, okay? Basically, cloth is the general term for things we use to make clothes or bed sheets or curtains and things like
fabric.
That. Fabric, indeed. Fabric is like more for, buying things to make clothes, though, I think.
Furniture, yeah. too.
Oh, furniture as well. Yeah. Okay, fabric as well. When I think of fabric, I think of my mother making her own clothing when I was growing up. But here, textiles is a more scientific word. And this is what you use if you talk about the industry. Oh, I work in textiles. I work at a clothing company that produces fabrics for different clothing companies around the world.
Yeah, one of my best friends worked for an Italian company. It was textiles only, and they produced fabric for suits, very, very expensive suits. And I learned more about textiles during that period. I didn't know much about it, but this particular scientific invention uses bacteria. Now, bacteria can be good and bad. Bacteria sometimes makes us sick. And there's also good bacteria that helps digest food in our stomachs. So they're using bacteria, and as Tom said, researchers at a place called the Korean Advanced Institute of Science and Technology discovered that bacteria can not only be used to create fabric, but also dye it in multiple colors. That was pretty shocking to me. All in a single process, but it really was a process of invention because they had to, they had starts and stops and hits and misses. Sometimes things worked that they tried and sometimes they didn't. And so they had to reinvent what they were doing. Now, what's fabric? Well, we just finished talking about fabric material. You said your mom used the word fabric to sew clothes. My mom just used the word material. Let's go to the fabric store. We're going to get some new material for a dress or we're going to get some material for some pillows that she was making. So fabric can be dyed, of course. It can be changed into different colors. We use stuff, some sort of substance. It could be a natural substance or it can be a synthetic dye as well. But we can dye things ourselves at home. I've bought dye and thrown a pair of pants into the washing machine and dyed it that way. But this is a process that they're using bacteria to dye this fabric into different colors, which is interesting. I know.
I did want to say fabric is a non-count noun. Mm. How much fabric did you buy, for example? But if you talk about different kinds of fabric, then you can add an S to this. Fabrics, for example, you could buy lots of different kinds of fabrics at the Yongle Market.
I don't say it like that, though. I never
different
put
kinds
an
of
S.
Fabrics?
Yeah, I do. I say different kind of fabric.
Okay. You can say it that way as well. But I believe in some grammatical book, it probably says you can add an S to this. But in any case, there are different places where you can buy lots of fabric. And you can dye it in multiple colors. It can be changed into different colors, blue, red, pink, purple, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And this innovation could replace the harmful chemicals and synthetic fibers currently used in the textile industry, which pollute water, soil, and air. So they're kind of making this biodegradable, I guess.
Yeah.
It's a single process, it's an innovation, a new idea, and it could replace those harmful chemicals. Okay, so we don't need to have those chemicals, those nasty chemicals that are used to produce clothing and to dye clothes. And we've also got synthetic fibers. Those are artificial fibers like polyester or rayon, things like that. They are synthetic. They're not natural like cotton or linen or whatever. Those are natural fibers, but the synthetic ones are artificial like the ones I just mentioned, polyester, etc.
Yeah, rayon is used a lot in cheap clothing, I've noticed. Mm. It's not very comfortable either in the heat and humidity of Taiwan. So sometimes those natural fibers, they just breathe better. But yeah, we're talking about synthetic fibers versus more non-artificial. So no natural versus synthetic. There are just lots of different types of fabrics out there, but I just said fabrics out there. Mm. And this one, though, is something that's going to be better for the earth and more sustainable, because if it does get thrown into a dump, it will eventually just disintegrate into the dirt. Whereas some of the unnatural or artificial fabrics that we use, man, they never disappear. They're around for hundreds of years. So that's what their goal is, at least, at this Korean Advanced Institute of Science and Technology. Now, the team used something called bacterial cellulose. I don't use this term myself in real life, but that's the technical term. It's a natural fiber that's produced by bacteria, and they use it because it's sustainable. That's the number one reason they use it. So it's produced by microbes. Microbes are tiny, tiny, tiny living organisms like bacteria. We also call them microorganisms, microbes, microorganisms.
Indeed. So, of course, we've got this bacterial cellulose, and that's produced by microbes. It's a natural fiber. It's not synthetic. It's not artificial. And they combined it with color-producing bacteria. Okay, so that's the process in which they used. They had this natural fiber, which was combined with bacteria that could produce color. Okay, I guess there are certain kinds of bacteria that can produce different kinds of colors, and they were able to isolate those different kinds of bacteria for different colors, purple, red, pink, mauve, chartreuse, or whatever. They probably have a whole range of colors. And initially, or at least at the beginning, the bacteria struggled to work together. Okay, so you have to have them cooperate, because bacteria are living things, so they struggled to work together. But the researchers overcame this challenge by introducing the color-producing bacteria only after the fabric-forming bacteria had grown. So they figured out a process to make this work. At the beginning, it did not work. So they introduced the color-producing bacteria after the fabric-forming bacteria had grown. So they basically reversed the steps, I guess, or figured out different steps in order to make this work.
It was almost like the bacteria as a baby wasn't grown enough for it to accept a change in color. So they just did this in steps, I think, instead of all at once. That wasn't working. To overcome a challenge just means you deal with something like a problem successfully. So we all have challenges in our lives, and we have to overcome them. And they overcame this problem by just introducing the color-producing bacteria. Those are special, at a later time in the whole process. So they did it after the fabric-forming bacteria. Notice they're separating the kind of bacteria they have. There's color-producing and there's fabric-forming. And they take care of the fabric-forming bacteria first, and then they introduce or add that color-producing bacteria into the process. This method created fabrics in shades of purple, blue, green, yellow, and red. Tom was adding a very special color. So one thing I've noticed about English words for colors versus Taiwanese or Chinese words for colors is we have many more. Mm. We have names of colors that are just crazy. And we usually name colors based on what they feel like grass green, sky blue, Tiffany blue, because the blue that the Tiffany store that sells jewelry uses is a certain shade. And it's quite unique. People know what Tiffany blue is, at least in the States. But we give colors lots and lots of different names. I've noticed that.
There's even Dodger blue, blue they use in the Los Angeles Dodgers baseball caps or whatever. Yep. And yes, you've got different shades of purple. Maybe you've got magenta or lilac or whatever.
Eggplant.
Those could all be different kinds of purple, different kinds of blue as well. There's so many different kinds of blue, especially if you're an artist and you go buy paints, for example, in an art store. They have all sorts of different names for different shades of these colors. And here in the next paragraph, it says, tests showed that the colors remained bright after washing and heat exposure. So you don't want the colors to fade. That's probably a big problem here. But the colors actually remained bright after washing. I'm not sure if they would remain bright after repeated washings, but in this particular case, they washed the clothes, and they were still bright like they were at the beginning, And they also subjected them to heat exposure,
yeah.
which means maybe they were put in a dryer or something like that, and they were, of course, much hotter than usual. Of course, you don't want to put, say, wool in the dryer because it will shrink. If you wear an XL size, it will suddenly become an S size. take my word for it. I've done that before when I was learning how to wash my own clothes during university. I made some mistakes there with putting the wool sweater in a dryer. I learned my lesson the hard way.
Oh.
But here they heated the clothing as if they were being put in the dryer, and the colors remained bright, even after washing and being exposed to heat.
Well, even cotton will shrink, so you have to be careful when you do your washing, your laundry. I tend to not, especially my jeans, I don't tend to want to put them in the dryer, you know. So, yeah, you got to make sure you look at the laundry instructions on any clothing you have. It's usually a tag inside a seam. So check that out, especially you people out there who have never done laundry and your mom's always done it for you. Make sure you don't wreck your favorite piece of clothing. Now, tests showed that colors remain bright after washing and heat exposure. I think it's a drier experience. I think that's what they're talking about there, like you said, Tom. Now, the technology may take 5 years to reach stores. So what does that tell us? Well, right now, we're not seeing these types of fabrics for sale at like Zara or other stores here. It hasn't reached the market, but it looks promising. And it's also an eco-friendly alternative or option to traditional textiles. I think it's really fascinating that they came up with this, and that anyone figured this out is amazing to me. Now, if you're looking for alternatives, it just means you're looking for other options, maybe a substitute for something. It's a different choice for something. And the researchers hope this will encourage consumers to choose sustainability over cost. If you have a choice between maybe a polyester or rayon dress versus a dress made out of this bacteria-produced cloth, pick the one that's sustainable to help the earth. That's what they're hoping will do, and that will protect the environment for future generations. That's their hope.
Okay, we're at the end of our discussion of the first part of our lesson for today. Now we're going to move on to the second part. It's about those prisoners in Uzbekistan. And they're reading books to get out of jail early. Let's find out what this is all about. Let's listen.
Uzbekistan's prisoners earn sentence reductions through reading program. Uzbekistan has introduced an innovative approach that allows prisoners to reduce their sentences through reading. The program is administered by a special commission that evaluates prisoners' comprehension after they complete each book. Those who pass the assessment can reduce their sentences by 3 days per book, with a maximum annual reduction of 1 month. Inspired by similar initiatives in Brazil and Italy, the program aims to promote education and rehabilitation. More than 13,500 prisoners may benefit from it, though those serving life sentences are excluded. The reading list includes classics such as The Old Man and the Sea by Ernest Hemingway and The Trial by Franz Kafka, selected to encourage moral reflection and critical thinking. Supporters argue that reading can help inmates develop empathy and communication skills, which can improve their ability to reintegrate into society after release. However, concerns remain regarding fairness in testing and equal access to books. Officials emphasize the importance of transparency and consistent implementation to ensure the program's success. We're going to take a quick break. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Okay, welcome back, everybody. We've got another news story to talk about today. It's all about Uzbekistan, which is a country in Central Asia, if I'm not mistaken. It used to be part of the Soviet Union, but now it is independent. And indeed, it's right next to Russia there in Central Asia. But they've got prisoners, just like we've got prisoners all over the world. And here it says they earn sentence reductions through a reading program. So, yeah, your sentence, of course, is how long you're supposed to stay in prison. And sentence can also be a verb. I sentence you to death, or I sentence you to life imprisonment. You'll never get out of jail for what you did. And so they can have their sentences or their jail terms reduced if they read books.
Yeah, so it's a very innovative approach. It's something that's kind of brand new. And it does allow prisoners to reduce their sentences through reading. I love reading, so I think that's a great idea. Now, the program is administered by a special commission, and they evaluate prisoners' comprehension after they complete each book. They probably have a list of books that they recommend for them to read. And actually, since they're in prison, they only have prison books to read, right? They have a prison library in these prisons, most of them. Now, if you administer something, you just run it. That's your job. You make sure that everything is going smoothly with whatever you're doing. So the administration thought, well, you know, let's try this. And it's administered by a special commission. You'll often see commissions. Commissions are groups of people, you know, that usually are in charge of some sort of event. They might have an art commission, where a group of people are get together and decide, you know, maybe there's a contest of the best piece of art. They decide what's going to win. This commission actually gets together, and they're the ones who look at the prisoner's comprehension after they complete each book and decide, did they really read it? Do they understand what they read? You know, sadly, a lot of people that are in prison weren't very well educated. Maybe they came from a broken home, or they didn't go to a good school, or they dropped out of school too early because they were facing other issues in their lives. So one of the things that's tough for some of the prisoners is they don't, some of them don't read, Tom. So maybe that's one of the things that they provide in prison to help some of the prisoners who don't have a good reading comprehension develop better reading skills. But this commission gets together. They probably either have a test, they have an assessment. That's the same sort of idea. After the prisoners read, and they decide that whether they've sufficiently read that, if their comprehension is high enough, whether they get credit for that book.
Right. I may not actually pass these tests myself because I do a lot of reading, but for some reason I can't really remember what I read. So you're supposed to remember things after you read them. So here they need to have good listening and reading comprehension, and they'll be tested on their understanding of each book that they complete or each book that they finish reading.
Yeah.
And those who pass the assessment can reduce their sentences by 3 days per book with a maximum annual reduction of 1 month. So there are probably many of you out there thinking, boy, if you really sat down and read like maybe 5 books a day or something like that, maybe you could get out of jail many years earlier, but they do have a maximum of 1 month, okay? So you can have that reduction for every month, so you can't go too far with it, but still, it's better than nothing.
Yeah, maximum is the greatest possible amount, and the opposite of that would be minimum, right? So I was kind of a little bit disappointed when I saw that they could only get an annual reduction of 1 month. So maybe they're sentenced to 10 years. So each year they would get 1 month. So they would get 10 months reduction if they read as many books as they could each year. I think also, though, the goal of this is not just to get them out early, but it's to educate them while they're in prison as to some of the things they need to improve their lives, like how to be a critical thinker and how to, maybe how to change their moral values. Maybe they grew up thinking it was okay to steal from other people. You know, they thought, well, I'm poor. I'm just going to take from this rich person. So what? But that's wrong. Maybe they didn't grow up knowing that was wrong or feeling that was wrong. So I think it's, they've got more goals than just to get released early or to reduce sentences with this. They're trying to help them long term.
And they probably have a certain level of books that they can read. For example, reading Mother Goose fairy tales is probably not going to cut it But then at the other extreme, they might be reading, say, A la recherche du temps perdu by Proust or whatever. Mm. That would be too difficult as well. So something in between, and hopefully some books that will teach them something about life after prison so that they will not commit the crimes again and go back to prison. I guess it's all about rehabilitation, which we talk about in the next paragraph here. So it says, inspired by similar initiatives in Brazil and Italy, the program aims to promote education and rehabilitation. Okay, so this has already been done in Brazil and Italy. We're talking about similar initiatives. An initiative is just some sort of idea for a project in a company or wherever. And basically Brazil and Italy thought of this. Hey, let's have our prisoners read books to maybe improve their lives and to make them better citizens when they get out of jail. So they began these programs in those countries. And so Uzbekistan was inspired by those programs. And yes, indeed, they want to promote education, but also rehabilitation. Okay, it kind of depends on how you feel about prisons. Some people think that prisoners should be sent to jail strictly as punishment. Okay, should send them there to be punished so that they suffer for what they've done. But other people think, no, you should rehabilitate them. You should try to get them to stop being criminals and become productive members of society.
Rehabilitation just means restoring someone back to a productive life after they've been in prison. I think it's punishment to be locked away and not having your freedom that way. But why waste the time? Why not do something productive? I think those that study in prison, there have been prisoners who have gotten their law licenses. Mm. They've studied to try to help overturn their sentences. So, you know, depending on how intelligent they are, maybe they can change their lives and turn them around. That's a lot better than learning how to be a worse or, a better criminal by listening to criminals who don't want to change. So I think if people want to change their lives, they should get a helping hand. That's my personal opinion. Now, more than 13,500 prisoners may benefit from it. So there are a lot of prisoners that they're working with in Uzbekistan that can actually participate in the program. Though it's pointed out here that those who are serving life sentences are excluded. To be excluded means you are not allowed to participate in something. Maybe you've been in high school and you wanted to get into a certain social group and you were excluded. They wouldn't let you in. You were kept from being included. So if you're included, that's the opposite of being excluded.
Right. So if you have a life sentence, if you murdered somebody or something like that, and you're not going to get out of jail, this program does not apply to you.
No.
But maybe they'll let them read a book and get maybe a piece of cake every week or something like that.
I would still read, yeah.
You got to do something in prison. I can't imagine them having smartphones and playing video games all day long. They got to do something productive.
Yeah, because they do sneak those in. Yeah.
They do indeed. And the reading list includes classics such as The Old Man and the Sea by Ernest Hemingway, which I read a long time ago. It's actually a pretty short book. I'm not really sure if I understood exactly what was going on there.
I'm not a big fan of Ernest Hemingway.
Depends. Yeah, he's got good stuff and bad stuff. And you either love him or hate him, basically. And also The Trial by Franz Kafka. These are some books that are maybe kind of challenging for prisoners. And they were selected to encourage moral reflection and critical thinking. So, of course, they're probably not letting these prisoners read anything they want to. They've got a select reading list that they should pick from because these books will encourage them to have moral reflection, to basically look at themselves and think, boy, I shouldn't be a criminal. I should actually be an outstanding member of society. And also with critical thinking, how to analyze things and basically how to be intelligent.
I think one thing they could do to help the prisoners with some of these more difficult books and to get as much as possible out of these books is to bring in a teacher, a professor, help them learn how to do critical thinking. They don't even teach that very well in schools anymore, how to be a critical thinker and not just accept everything you're told or taught, how to really pick apart things and reflect upon what you're reading. That's what I would do. I would see if they could hire some professors to come in and help some of the less dangerous prisoners really get as much as they can out of literature, because that's what this is classical literature.
Indeed, and of course in Uzbekistan, I think they speak Russian there, so maybe they can read some old, who were the brothers, Kasparov, I can't remember. Dostoevsky. Yeah. Maybe they can read some of those
Russian
books.
Literature is fabulous.
Sure, absolutely. So that's probably something they could learn a lot from, especially if they're reading in the original language. Mm-hmm. And here in the next paragraph, the final paragraph for today, it says, supporters argue that reading can help inmates develop empathy and communication skills, which can improve their ability to reintegrate into society after release. So these are people who support the program. They argue, or they state, that reading can help these inmates develop empathy. An inmate, of course, is a term for a prisoner, basically somebody who is in prison. And empathy means you have sympathy for other people. You can feel the way they do. Some criminals don't have empathy, so they kill other people without really regretting it at all. So maybe they can develop empathy by reading, and they'll also develop communication skills. Some of them may not even know how to read, and they'll be able to learn to read here and open the world, or open many worlds by reading books. And they can reintegrate into society after they get out of prison. To integrate means to be part of something, and to reintegrate means to be part of something again. So they were in society before, they were sent to prison, and now they're going to go back when they get out so they can reintegrate. They can be an outstanding citizen and not commit crimes again.
Now, we're going to bring up some negatives, I guess, here. Concerns remain regarding fairness in testing. Are they fair when they give these assessments? And is there equal access to books? Does everyone have an equal chance to read some of these books? And are they limited? You know, because you need to read quite a few to get that maximum annual reduction. So officials emphasize the importance of transparency. Transparency just means you're very open about the process, or you don't try to hide anything from anybody. So they want transparency in this program and consistent implementation to ensure the program's success. Consistent. If you're consistent, you always do the same thing in the same way. You don't suddenly change your rules. Being a parent, you need to be consistent with the rules. You can't suddenly change the rules or your kids won't trust that you're fair. So they want consistent implementation. When you implement something, you actually put something, usually a process or a plan, into action. So they want the way this initiative is rolled out to be consistent or put into practice in the same way in different cities of Uzbekistan.
And we wish them the best of luck. And that brings us to the end of our discussion for today. It's been great having you with us. From all of us here at English Digest, I'm Tom.
I'm Stephanie.
Goodbye.
Bye.